Michael Avery with Classic Business on Classic 1027.
Well, it's around about 27 to 7 here on Classic 1027. Lucky sevens, that means it's time for tonight's Classic Business panel. And there are so many exciting businesses out there doing great things. We've got a few of them lined up for you to share their stories. And I think Weber Wenzel needs to be commended because it's part of the law firm's Ignite 10 program, hashtag Ignite 10, which is all about, well, let's see. I've got Ali Amani, project lead and partner at Weber Wenzel on the line, so she can tell you what it's all about. Evening, Alia.
Evening. Happy to be here, and thanks for inviting us to speak about Ignite.
Now,
we're really excited about Ignite.
Yeah, it's a very exciting program because you've got such good businesses on the panel. Before I introduce the businesses, you're celebrating 150 years in business this year as a law firm, Weber Wenzel. So that's a milestone, and I think fitting to mark the occasion with this. What exactly will the hashtag Ignite 10 finalists receive?
Well, the reason we started Ignite is because we saw a critical gap in the market, and we really thought, you know, as part of our history and with our aim of shaping the future, we needed to play our part in supporting entrepreneurship as a key driver of our economy, and specifically wanting to support high-impact entrepreneurs that were disrupting their respective industries, particularly in the hope that they would, you know, drive employment and further business creation and pay it forward. And those are some of the considerations we had in formulating this particular program and also in deciding who we would select. So there are several reasons why we did it, but specifically we're excited about this particular group of 10 companies because of what they're doing to change their respective industries and what they're likely to do, the scalability of their businesses, their promise, and also their particular founders. We really like each of them. We think they're going to do great things. And we're very excited at the opportunity to partner with them, drive their growth, and support their futures.
I just wish we could have had all 10 on the panel tonight, but that really wouldn't have been practical. So we've decided to invite four and one of your expert panelists. Let's introduce listeners to the panel. We've got Andrea Bommet of Knife Capital and one of the Ignite expert panelists, a very well-known individual in the VC space. JP Kloppers, who's the CEO of Brandseye. James Tagg, who's a director and co-founder of company Quickit. Not Cricket, Quickit. Tian van der Spey, the CEO of Leaply as well, rounds off the businesses. Good evening, Andrea. This sort of access for these selected startups and scale-ups actually is quite massive. How did Knife Capital get involved in this?
Well, good evening. Thank you very much for having me on the show. Well, how did we get invited? How did we get involved? First of all, Alia called us, and I think that's a big part of it. I mean, it is about the networks, and when she told us about what Weber Wenzel was planning to go and do, immediately saw there was such a big need for it and jumped at the opportunity to be part of it, because it really is one of those big gaps that so many of our amazing companies, amazing entrepreneurs have. They just need that kind of support, so we are very honored to be part of it.
What is your role as an expert panelist, so to speak?
Well, I think the role was really to kind of go through this, to be honest, actually quite vast amount of amazing companies that applied and try to kind of go and select the top 10 that would benefit the most, could really kind of go and become the next showcases for South African entrepreneurship and would really benefit immediately from the services. I mean, everybody can benefit from it, but we tried to find those 10 companies that could really stand out, be the future champions of entrepreneurship here in South Africa. And it was a very, very difficult choice.
Extremely difficult choice, but I think you've done a great job. JP, I'd like to bring you in here. You're CEO of Brandseye. And if anyone hasn't heard of you yet, where have you been? Because you've become famous for using sentiment analysis for predicting other things like Brexit and Donald Trump, and the bookies and the markets were looking and betting the other way. How does your sentiment analysis work?
Thanks, yeah, and just to echo Andrea, thanks for having us on the show. I think our kind of fourth industrial revolution contribution, to come back to that, which is in the notes, is in blending machine learning and people. I think part of the thing which keeps us going and at the core of our organization is this belief that people's opinions matter, And if we can understand those opinions very deeply, you'll be able to tell things about what they might do next. And we've applied that in various ways. Obviously, the ones you mentioned, Brexit and the US elections, we just listened to what people were saying. And I think that ability to listen carefully is fundamental to any relationship, whether that's a government with its population or a company with its customers. And so that's a kind of applying a human first approach is different to what everybody else in the world has been doing and going very hard after the pure AI solutions. Our approach was, hang on, let's try and keep AI human by keeping humans in the loop. And so we've, through that approach and through investing in many years in refining that kind of piece of our technology, we've been able to do sentiment analytics like nobody else.
And just to explain that to listeners, obviously, if you've just got an AI algorithmic type approach, sometimes it's very difficult to pick up cultural nuance, or even someone being sarcastic on Twitter saying, "I really love Donald Trump," with some comments afterwards that would clearly indicate they don't love Donald Trump. So your crowdsourcing was a fantastic way around that, and you know, you've clearly predicted and presented the proof of concept in quite a grand way. Last year, you won an all-expenses-paid trip to pitch to potential investors in New York at the Endeavor International Selection Panel. If you look back, since your founding in 2006, you must have done quite a few pitches in your time. What have you learned about the art of pitching since you opened your doors?
That's a very good question. I think the art of pitching is often about asking the right questions, funny enough. I think it's to the same point of how we approach the sentiment and analytics for social media. It's a human first approach. And I think what I've learned is to quickly get through just getting somebody interested and telling somebody, here's what we've learned from listening to a billion conversations, get them interested straight away. And they're like, okay, wow, that's interesting. But then quickly turning that around to say, how could this serve you? How could this help you? Tell me about how we can apply this. That's really where the art of the pitch is, and trying to get through as much of that ground as possible, because otherwise you end up just talking about yourself and your technology for too long, and other people actually, that's not what they want to hear.
Well, I certainly know a few traders who would love to be able to use your sentiment analysis to try and predict some big market-moving events. If one just looks at elections and how they can move markets, there's certainly, I mean, value all over the place in sentiment analysis. James, I want to bring you in here as the co-founder of Quikit, and I think the business is really starting to gain traction, and people know of the brand out there. You've got a very quick and easy and sort of do-it-yourself way for anyone with an event concept to go collect the funds and the info they need to make an event a reality. Now, KNF Ventures actually invested in you, and you found yourself having to make the transition here from startup to scale up, to get aboard, to make decisions in consultation. How has that whole transition been for you as entrepreneurial founders? Was it a major adjustment?
Thanks for having me on the show. I would say that it's been pretty smooth as far as the transition could go. We were quite daunted by the concept of having a board and all that. I mean, when we started it was just four mates, you know, putting something together and kind of bootstrapping it up from 2011 up to 2017. And then when we got involved with KNF, we really liked the team. We really got along well. I think we sort of gelled quite well on just a human level. And so that kind of made the transition a little easier for us. But what it also did was really opened up, which I think Andrea was touching on earlier, was networks. Just in the 1 year that we've been with KNF, you know, the funding is obviously very important to us to help us grow and to help us reach our strategic objectives. But what we didn't see coming, which we should have, which is part of their name, is the networks. And that's really been instrumental in opening up certain doors for us, which we've benefited from tremendously, and I think we were able to give some of that back as we start to grow.
Now, that growth vision that you have, being a finalist in the Ignite 10 program, now gives you access to some of the top legal brains in the country. What are you hoping to get through this partnership with Weber Wenzel?
So I think one of our, it's not too secret, our key strategic objective for the future and right now actually is to really bring our ticketing technologies into the huge parts of the African that have got very fragmented ticket landscape, very fragmented payment landscapes, the IP law complicated around it. And I think what we're quite interested in is specifically also is how they can help us to really go into the kind of uncharted territory for us especially, and to go confidently there with the correct legal structures, so that we get things right from the get-go. From what I've heard, it can be quite a challenge. Secondly, what we've also found out recently is that, which we didn't realize in the beginning, was that intellectual property or IP is makes up more than 90% of our value as a online platform. So really putting protection around the IP and exploring the way in which IP can actually benefit us and make us grow is another thing we're really excited about from the partnership.
As we heard over the weekend from the Oracle of Omaha, that's probably the one area that he needed to brush up with his business strategy, and really valuing modern startup enterprises in the realm of the internet. A lot of the value is in the intangibles, is in the IP as well. So really understanding how exactly to do that. Now, when we look at our third business, it's actually, as I look at it, got a strong link through to my earlier guest, Anish Shivdasani, who's the CEO of Giraffe. And Andrea, I think you might know Giraffe quite well as well, but we'll circle back to that. Tian Leaply is all about helping university students and graduates answer one fundamental question. What's next when you're in your final year at varsity? And there are many out there who absolutely have a vision or an idea, but there are also very many out there who don't know what's next. And I think it's a question all graduates eventually ask, and it's one that you aim to be very good at answering. How?
Hi, Michael. Hi, panel. Thanks for having me. I'd say that, you know, being students ourselves, we realize that the whole process is quite, cumbersome, tedious, time-consuming to apply to companies, to find companies, to find opportunities. There's a lot of inefficiencies in the whole process. And so I think, you know, where we started off with, and we're probably one of those businesses that is going in another direction now that we didn't really intend to from the beginning. But how we solve the whole issues or the pain points that students, experience is that we managed to get them to create digital CVs or digital profiles on our system. And we've got, on the other side, we've got companies to list various programs, vacation work, internships, graduate development programs, and with an algorithm in the beginning, start to match the two. So where a student would see exactly in which, if they do a search in Joburg, they will see, oh, there are these 10, 20 companies, but I qualify for at least 10 of those roles offered by these companies, and then allowing them to one-click apply with their digital CV. And then I think the cool thing really about our platform is the fact that it's very transparent in terms of the whole application process. So we've managed to build an applicant tracking system that companies use. So when they do your profile, when they move you from the applicants bucket to the shortlist bucket, you have a dashboard where you can actually track the status of your application in real time. So you're never in that position as a student where you don't know what's happening. You know, is someone actually looking at their application? The whole process is quite smooth.
It's actually incredible when you think of how we are using technology to bridge this gap between work seekers and companies looking for skills out there. And pretty soon we're going to have, if we don't already, just this wealth of data and information that's going to remove a lot of friction in that process. Tian, when you look at being part of a program such as this, the Ignite 10 program, what excites you about being part of Ignite?
Well, I think, first of all, to be associated with Weber Bensel, they're actually one of our clients that we signed up recently, just before we got onto the program. So, they're one of the biggest law firms in South Africa. So it's great to be associated with them. I think we're a bootstrap company. We haven't taken on any funding up to this point. So for us, the value that we get from, you know, just not the legal services, but also the opportunity, the access to market, networking opportunities, that is massive if you don't have, you know, a lot of budget to work with. So we already have like a wish list of things that we want to chat to Ali about. And yeah, we're very excited to kick this off.
Andrew, having listened to JP and James and Tion, it's clear their businesses are in different stages of their development, with some requiring different services and different interventions based on the stage that they're in. Overall, though, just give me your appraisal and your review of these three businesses and where they're going.
Well, sure. I think all three of them have amazing entrepreneurs. I think, that's key. You can have the best technology in the world. At the end, it comes down to the entrepreneurs. The entrepreneurs, the entrepreneurial teams, the founding teams. So with all three of them, and actually all 10 of the selected companies, we were absolutely amazed by the team, and I am fortunate that I actually knew all teams of all the 10 companies. So from that point of view, I can really go and vouch for that. And then all of them actually are addressing a real market need, which is also something that's very, very important. I mean, you can have a cool business, a cool app, but if it doesn't really address a need, then how sustainable is it? Mm. In all of those cases, they really address a need. And then they actually have, all of them have a differentiator, have something that really makes them unique and therefore gives them the opportunity to actually scale beyond South Africa, become really the success stories that we are all looking for. So I think if you want, they are all three totally different, as you said, but if you're looking for the common denominator between all those three companies, I think that's what it is.
And obviously networks has come through quite strongly. Alia, it's so important. It becomes the lifeblood of a company because networks help generate leads, help entrepreneurs develop long-standing relationships with people who either become mentors or key partners on this road as well. What sort of role do you see Weber Wenzel playing as one of the sort of magic circle firms in the country in helping expand this access to networks?
I think that's a very good question and certainly one of the key value adds which we're hoping to offer in a meaningful way. The first, of course, is access to our internal network. Internally, one of the things we pride ourselves on is the fact that we have a group of specialists who have very nuanced capabilities. And so what each company will have is access to a single point of contact or a client relationship partner, and through that partner, they will have access to exactly the right specialists that they will need based on their particular business, based on their legal needs. So access to that legal network from a mentoring perspective, I think, is important, as well as from a relationship-building perspective and ensuring that they receive tailored advice. From an external perspective, what we've been trying to do, and we're starting it off slowly, is to start profiling them through our platforms. As you might expect, many of our clients and our partners are in fact, blue chips, corporate investors who might very well be interesting leads for these particular companies. And what we've realized is through our networks and through our events, potentially we can create and facilitate deeper and wider access to markets. And so we're going to do that in a very facilitated, targeted way based on the timing availability, the needs of each company. And part of this process, as we've just launched, is to have these initial conversations, real conversations with each company to ask what it is that they need, what would be valuable right now. Of course, each company doesn't necessarily want to be kind of overstretched in terms of too many leads and needs to come at the right time. So very much what we're trying to do through this program is to facilitate a plan that takes into account, A, the market and the value adds and the wider value adds we're trying to provide, as well as the legal needs through our internal network.
And JP, listening to your story and to James and Tian, it's fascinating me to me in particular to find out through this process of building a business, and you've been at this now for 12 years, and with what you've learned along the way, what you can share in terms of what you've learned. Because if you could go back and do something differently, I'm sure there are a few things that you would do differently, but I'm going to ask the question differently. What wouldn't you change? What, knowing what you know now, would you leave exactly as is and go back and do exactly the way you did it from the start?
I think our birth story as brands are, we were born out of an agency called Quirk. So we had the benefit of, you know, having an in-company incubator for the first couple of years. That certainly we wouldn't change. I think just having that safe space to prove your technology, to grow, to build the initial few people, which is current years are very hard as well, but they're very precarious years, and you know, we're facing that now. You start a new team, you have to hire people, you get your first few customers, and that's hard work, and it feels like it's a baby that could die at any minute. So I wouldn't change those early years of just having that incubation period, and I think a part of that is just who we have on our cap table. You know, we've fought really hard to have people who are invested in the business, both from externally, people who've bought in, who've put in money or kind of opened their doors into other countries. But I think almost more importantly is the staff in the business, giving them opportunities to earn stock or to buy stock and to really have a team. We're now between 60 or 70 people where there's a real alignment of heart, of vision, and we've fought hard for that, and I think we continue to do that, and that's certainly something I wouldn't change. That you know, there's that old saying of never underestimate the power of a small group of people to change the world, because indeed they are the only ones we ever have.
Great saying that, and also people. You know, whenever I chat to highly numerate individuals in the private equity space or in business with a CA or any kind of designation behind their names, they generally come back to the human element. They could give you, you know, the other side of the balance sheet and cash flows and work out everything else, but that human element of being able to evaluate A, your partners, who you go into business with, but also your employees and building that team, actually is one of the softer skills that perhaps we don't tend to focus on as often as we should in the startup space. Would you go along with that?
Yeah, I would. I mean, obviously your technology and having a genuine defendable position in the market is your ticket to play.
But a moat, as Elon Musk would yeah, would laugh at.
I think it's your moat. I think maybe, but I think there are some moats which are bigger than others, and obviously you want the biggest one you can build. But I think often people look from the outside and think, what's this going to be worth at the end? Forgetting that it's actually, you know, 10 of the best years of your life that you give to building something.
Right.
And that's not just for a big paycheck at the end. That's also for a genuine journey of having fun and growing and meeting people and doing amazing things and having stories to tell your grandchildren one day about what you did with your life. You know, those are important. And so the people you take along with you on that journey is just as important.
And James, that seems to be the story of Quikit as well, as you described it being sort of four mates just looking at eventing and building this thing into a business. If you were to look back and not change one thing, what would that one thing that you would not change be?
I was hoping you weren't going to ask me this, because I was thinking all the things that I would have changed. And there actually aren't a lot, but one thing I wouldn't change, touching on what JP was talking about in terms of who you hire and how you build a team, we're still a small team, but we've never gone the route of getting people with letters after their name or big degrees, or we've always tried to sort of build a company with a culture that kind of mirrors our own aspirations, our own ethics, our own way of looking at things. And in that way, we've built a very tight and close team that almost is able to act autonomously, individually, but with the same common kind of understanding of how we should build this business and how we should treat our customers and how we should grow and how we should do, basically operate. And so for me, that's been an absolute total blessing, really, to have it in that way. And it was just by pure chance, just with instinct, that we did it that way. And it's really worked out well for us.
Yeah, sometimes it's the instinctual things in business that do tend to leave you with the best stories to tell your grandkids. Tion, I can't let you get away with not answering that question as well. Anything that you would leave absolutely as it is, given your hindsight?
Yeah, I'd say I think something that I did get right in the beginning and the stages was that I was very teachable. I managed, you know, it was very, very lonely in the beginning. You have this idea, you get excited about it, but then you don't know how to express this idea that's in your head. And so when you talk to people, you know, they don't really get what you're trying to say, what you have in your head. And what I managed to get right was surround myself with people who could really guide me, you know, in this journey of how to start a business. I managed to hook up with Hannes van Rensburg from Fundamo right in the beginning. And I always remember what he told me in the beginning. He said, a business is just a collection of contracts. So he was very adamant that you need to get your legal side, you know, ready from the start. Gilles Leroux is someone that I used to work for from Capitec. He also is an advisor and a mentor. And so throughout the years, you know, I managed to get a lot of wisdom and insights from people like this. And, you know, I wouldn't exchange that for anything.
Just as we wrap up, I think some fantastic nuggets and insights there. Alia, where to hear for the Ignite 10 project? Obviously, you've just announced it and a fairly long road ahead.
Yes, exactly right. I think we're just starting, but certainly we don't see a formal end to the program as such, particularly in relation to the value adds. We really see this as a long-term partnership, and we really are looking to really support these businesses over the in the long-term future. But in the immediate case, what we're going to do is have several meetings and engagements with them, really to get to know them on a personal level, understand what their objectives are, and understand what their legal priorities are. What we're also going to do is create a plan around when they should do what to prioritize, and then how best to allocate the free legal services and discounted services that we're going to offer them. As part of this, we're also going to develop and prioritize the value adds and see how we can offer these to them in the most strategic and timely way.
Well, unfortunately, I have to end it there because we've literally got 15 seconds left on the show. There's so much more to talk about, but I think we've been lucky enough to get an insight and a glimpse into the work that you're doing with some of these very exciting businesses and hopefully in a few years' time, world-beating businesses, as we know we develop and have such fantastic human capital in this country that goes out and conquers the world. Thank you very much, Ali Amani, project lead and partner at Weber Wenzel, who's joined by Andrea Bommert, partner at Knife Capital, and our three intrepid entrepreneurs, JP Kloppers, the CEO of Brand's Eye, James Tagg, the co-founder of Quickit, and Tian van der Spey, the CEO of Leaply. Be sure to tune in to Classic Business Breakfast with Arabile Gamede and Anastasia Aronsa tomorrow. We just didn't have time to cross to them to find out what they're going to be talking about. I believe they're going to be looking at cryptocurrency and the Oracle of Omaha's disparaging remarks. We're going to have a bit of a crypto shootout on the Business Breakfast Show tomorrow. That's all for tonight, folks. I think Glenn Lewington is standing by with Classic Silver Screen up next on Classic 102.7. Good night.